From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama called for sweeping changes to gun laws after the Newtown massacre just 3 months ago. But the gun bill that will go before the full Senate next month is not the sweeping piece of legislation that reform advocates hope to sweep through Congress. The assault weapons ban is in deep trouble. So is the cap on mega clips of ammunition. So are universal background checks. All in all, the heart of it. This hour on Point, what's happening to gun reform after the nightmare in Newtown? You can join the conversation. Is this really it? The best we can do? All we can do? Is it all we should do? Why? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're going to hear pro, con, and a voice close to Newtown in this hour. But first, let's go back to January 16th, President Obama presenting his plan to reduce gun violence. It was based on Vice President Joe Biden's big recommendations.
This is our first task as a society, keeping our children safe. This is how we will be judged. And their voices should compel us to change. And that's why last month I asked Joe to lead an effort, along with members of my cabinet, to come up with some concrete steps we can take right now.
Their voices compel us to change. The voices of 20 little dead children at the Newtown Sandy Hook Elementary School, 27, more than 20, killed that day in the kind of epic violence. We start with the facts today. Two reporters who are all over the story, how this is moving and not moving through Washington. Fawn Johnson is with us, national reporter for the National Journal. And in Washington, Jackie Kucinich, congressional reporter for USA Today. Fawn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for being here.
And Jackie Kucinich, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
So what's happened this week? What was on the table and what's going to actually be voted on? Fawn, let me come first to you.
Well, so let's just go back quickly and review what has happened in the last couple of weeks. The Senate Judiciary Committee put together a package of four gun bills. Now, two of these are relatively minor. One of the minor ones have to do with some funding for school safety and boosting some gun trafficking laws. But the two major pieces of legislation are an assault weapons ban that includes a ban on those high-capacity magazine clips and a expansion of background checks for firearm purchases. All of those bills have passed through the committee, which is readying them for a floor debate, which we're expecting to happen sometime in the next couple of weeks. The problem, of course, is that particularly the assault weapons ban is one of the most controversial pieces of legislation on the entire agenda. It received no Republican votes, and even some of the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, has said that he's probably not going to vote for that bill on the floor. So it doesn't look like it's going to pass. But that doesn't mean that they don't want to have a big Senate floor debate, which they will. And so Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is putting together essentially the plans, laying the groundwork for a floor debate. So he has put together what he calls a base bill of things that he thinks can pass. Those are some of the smaller pieces of legislation that I mentioned earlier. And then senators will have the opportunity to amend. And so there will be votes on all of these things. But the question of what is actually going to get through the Senate remains unanswered.
So, Jackie Kucinich, let's look at the most substantive of these four pieces that came out of the Judiciary Committee. That is the assault weapons ban, which had within it this cap on the size of clips that guns could carry. And secondly, universal background checks. What's happened with those two, and how do the odds look for them now in the Senate, the democratically controlled Senate?
Well, I mean, the thing about the assault weapons ban is it was kind of DOA right after it was introduced. Even Democrats who had supported it in the past, someone like Senator Pryor from Arkansas, he once supported extending the background, or I'm sorry, re-upping the assault weapons ban that expired in 2004, and he no longer supports it. So people have taken a step back from this bill since it expired in 2004. So its chances weren't that great to begin with. Now, background checks is interesting. The NRA has come out against universal background checks, something they once supported in 1999. This bill would, the hitch is, the problem with this bill, when you talk to Republicans, is that it would extend background checks to private transactions. So, Tom, if I sold you a gun, we would have to go get a background check. Right now, we wouldn't have to.
It's not universal, obviously, right? You've got to include those to have universal background checks.
Yes, exactly. So that is, and so they don't want that to be a part of it. Because they don't know where there's an argument about whether a sale receipt or some kind of record should be kept of that sale, like they do right now federally licensed gun stores.
Mm-hmm.
So whether there would have to be that kind of mirrored system is the argument right now. The bill that went through committee does have that. There's also a compromise in the works between Senator Schumer, Senator Kirk from Illinois, Senator Manchin from West Virginia. They've been trying to find Republican co-sponsors for their bill, Republican support for their bill, which is a little bit different than Schumer's. So the background check bill is the biggest question mark as this goes forward. It's the gray area where the trafficking, school safety, those aren't very controversial. Background assault weapons ban is not going to happen. Background checks is the big question here.
Fawn, as it stands now, would it require checks at gun shows where so many guns are now sold? Or would that fall under the checks as proposed in the legislation? Or was that seen as a private transaction not under the check?
No, absolutely. That's actually the
absolutely Tom, what?
Absolutely, the legislation that is on the table right now would require background checks at gun shows.
Okay.
And that is the largest portion of private sales take place through gun shows. And the question, of course, is how exactly does that happen? And I think that some of the negotiations that are going on inside the Senate have to do with how can you make that happen in such a way that it doesn't create an undue burden on private sellers. The problem, of course, is that the second that you require a background check, then there becomes a record of the purchase. And the question is, if you're a licensed firearm dealer, of course, part of your job is to keep a log of all of those purchases. But if you're a private seller, that seems to be a lot to ask of you.
I'm trying to keep the line drawn clearly here, though, Fawn. Let's just keep
right.
it gun shows for a second. You're
okay.
saying it would cover gun shows. They would
yes,
have
would.
To. So what percentage do you or Jackie, do you know what percentage of gun transactions are currently this kind of private transaction between me and you or, you know, me and somebody else? What percentage of guns in America are sold that way?
I've heard about 40%.
40%?
Yeah. Well, and let's – I think
it depends
40,
on who you ask. I think
right.
if
it depends
you,
on who
yeah,
you
I
ask.
Mean, it's one of those loaded questions.
I thought 40% was the percentage of transactions that are currently – what is it? Not don't go through background checks.
Right.
I thought the 40% included
but most
gun
of those
shows.
Gun shows aren't necessarily
private sellers. Gun shows can be federally licensed firearm sellers.
Okay, so let's back up. What percentage of gun sales are neither through licensed federal dealers, you know, federally licensed dealers, or through gun shows, but rather, you know, sort of person to person?
Oh, that's a
smaller
number.
I was told there'd be no math, Tom.
Okay, well, we're beyond the realm of math.
My understanding is that we're looking at less than 10%, and essentially what you're talking about is there's the kind of private sale that would go between, say, me and Jackie,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the other kind of private sale that I think people are more concerned about, which those are the things that go over the internet, so through Craigslist and some of the gun websites. I think those are the ones that people are more concerned about because that really is a transaction from stranger to stranger, whereas I
sure.
know Jackie, and if I sell her a gun, I know that she's not going
maybe
to
a different deal. And, of course, the volume can change radically. When the background check first went into effect, gun show sales were a tiny fraction, which is part of
right.
the reason that they were not covered there. Let's go to clips and the size of clips. Now, was this inside Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, senators? Was it inside her assault weapons ban? Was it tucked in there? What happens to the cap on clips as things are unfolding here?
It is in the Feinstein legislation, but there's also another bill authored by a New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg that is separate from Feinstein's legislation. So there is a chance this could also be an amendment to this bill and be on its own without the assault weapons ban attached to it, making it, in theory, easier to get through.
What are the odds of that passing look like, Jackie?
Pretty small. I mean, there really
is. One thing I would say about
it's more than the assault weapons ban.
Fawn?
The high capacity magazine clip that has two things going for it. One is that it is something that moderate Democrats like Patrick Leahy, who will not vote for the assault weapons ban, can be attracted to. I think that he would be willing to vote for a limit on bullets inside a high-capacity magazine clip. The other thing that has going for it, and I think this is important even if it's not going to pass, is that it has some very good talking points. Dianne Feinstein said at the last Judiciary Committee markup that you'd have to be – you could make fun of anybody who said that they need a 30-round magazine to go hunting for a deer. Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of talking points that I think at some point, once this starts to get to aired out in the Senate, the people are going to start to realize that maybe they can vote for some of these things and not be pilloried by the NRA or gun rights advocates.
But to review here, 3 months now, 4 months maybe by the time this gets to the floor and gets to a vote in the democratically controlled Senate, we are likely, as you describe it, to have no assault weapons ban. The cap on clips itself in great question here, and very possibly, likely no universal background check.
That's what I would say. Yes,
and then we have to talk about the House, which is another ballgame,
which is kind of a full roadblock. We'll look at that and much more when we come back. A senator from the Newtown State, Connecticut, U.S. Senator Chris Murphy joins us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking 3 months after the massacre of children at Sandy Hook, asking if gun reform is about to be gutted, stripped down, stripped out in the U.S. Senate. Fawn Johnson is with us from National Journal. She's in Washington covering all this, their national reporter. Jackie Kucinich is congressional reporter for USA Today. They've been following all the political to-ing and fro-ing that has left all this where it stands today. 20 little children lost on that day to the AR-15. In a late February testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Neil Heslin, whose son Jesse Lewis was slain December 14th at Sandy Hook Elementary School, urged lawmakers to strengthen gun laws.
Mental health issues, better background checks, bans on these weapons, bans on high-capacity magazines. They all have to come together and they all have to work effectively. It has to be done simply. Common sense tells you that. That's a dangerous weapon, and anybody that can deny or argue that isn't being honest.
Common sense, said one grieving father, has to be done. But it's now looking like much of it will not be done. Yesterday, Vice President Joe Biden told NPR's Melissa Block, on All Things Considered, that he and the Obama administration plan to continue to fight for a ban on assault weapons to be included in a larger bill to Congress as an amendment, maybe beyond that time, despite signs that such a ban does not have enough support, even from members of Biden's own Democratic Party.
I believe that the vast majority of the American people agree with us. The vast majority of gun owners agree with us that military-style assault weapons are these are weapons of war. They don't belong in the street. And the recent decision declaring the right of someone to own a weapon in their home for self-protection, Justice Scalia acknowledged that you can constitutionally ban certain types of weapons. And so I haven't given up on this.
Could maybe, can maybe, but will it happen? Doesn't look likely. Talking with NPR's David Wellna yesterday, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said the assault weapons ban will fail, and not from the lack of support only on the GOP side.
The truth is that there's just not the votes to pass the assault weapons ban. I mean, there are more than a handful of Democrats that would vote against it, so there's just not the votes.
We're going to hear in a moment from Democratic Senator from Connecticut where this massacre went down, Chris Murphy. But first, from somebody who grew up near Newtown, who was in Aurora, Colorado, in fact, took buckshot on the night of that cinema slaughter in Aurora, Colorado. Stephen Barton is with us, graduated from Syracuse University May of last year. He's currently an outreach and policy associate for Mayors Against Illegal Guns, grew up in Southbury, Connecticut, 10 minutes from Newtown. He'll be today at a press conference with Joe Biden and New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Newtown families to press for stronger limits on guns. Stephen Barton, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You were there in the theater in Aurora. You grew up just around the corner from Newtown. You're watching, along with the rest of us, what's happening in Congress this week in the Senate on potential change, and a lot of it seems to be going nowhere. What's your reaction?
I mean, it's certainly disheartening, not just as, you know, a survivor of gun violence myself, but I think just as an American, you know, everyone I talk to is very frustrated that we have this sort of inaction in Congress, not, you know, 4 months, 3 months after so many children were murdered in cold blood. So, you know, it's very frustrating, but, you know, I think there's still a potential there, maybe not the assault weapons ban, but for other measures equally important, such as universal background checks. You know, I think the momentum is still there.
You were shot in Aurora. You must have paid close attention back in December. We all did. I mean, it was such a sense of crisis and anguish in this country to see all those little dead children. Did you think at that time, after Aurora and then after December 14th and the Newtown massacre, did you think that there was a strong chance, even a certainty, of some significant gun reform, Stephen?
You know, I thought there was a stronger chance then than there is now. But, you know, this isn't a sprint. It's certainly more a marathon than anything else. So, you know, while we may not see the results that, you know, we're really hoping for with an assault weapons ban this year, you know, I think we're building really a coalition of different concerned groups that have kind of turned this into their issue and are voting on this issue and plan to vote on this issue in a way that they never have before.
What makes you think that? Here we are just 3 months after Newtown and it's going nowhere. I mean, it's a marathon, but what makes you think you're winning? I mean, if this doesn't make it happen, what would make some kind of gun reform happen? Maybe this country is just not going to go there.
Well, you know, I'd like to think it won't take another massacre or another series of massacres, but, I mean, the history of this this issue, that's kind of been the case. You know, we see unprecedented a scale of violence, and then we react. And so, I mean, obviously there are some entrenched special interests, the gun lobby in particular, that have kind of dominated this issue for many years without any real challenger. But I think that's absolutely changing. You see an organization founded by former Representative Gabby Giffords and her husband. You see Mayor Bloomberg investing more and more of his time and resources into this fight. The Brady campaign has been an advocate for many years. I mean, I think the forces of reason are marshaling, and I think we'll see change to some extent this year, but even more down the road.
There's gun reform optimism from Stephen Barton. He grew up in Southbury, Connecticut, 10 minutes from Newtown, was in the theater in Aurora, Colorado, shot there, among those shot. We're glad that you're well, Stephen, and glad you're better. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
It's been a big week in the U.S. Senate. On this front, Fawn Johnson of National Journal, Jackie Kucinich of USA Today are with us. They and many others were watching, listening, as the big players came out on to say, okay, here's what we've got on the gun front. Senate Majority Leader, Democrat, said that he wouldn't have been able to get the gun control bill to the Senate floor past a filibuster if it included assault weapons. He didn't have enough votes, he said on Tuesday.
Diane has worked so hard on this. She understands, going back to the day she found the mayor dead in his office and then killed, how strongly she feels about that. I know that. But right now, her amendment, using the most optimistic numbers, has less than 40 votes. That's not 60. I have to get something on the floor so we can have votes on that issue and the other issues that I've talked about.
Majority Leader Harry Reid there saying, sorry, Diane has worked so hard on this. Here is Dianne Feinstein, California Senator. She was Tuesday night on CNN's The Situation Room responding to Reid, saying that assault weapons would be out of the base bill, the base gun reform bill.
I'm not going to lay down and play dead. I think the American people have said in every single public poll that they support this kind of legislation. It's aimed to protect children, to protect schools and malls. It's aimed to dry up the supply of these over time. And it came out on a 10-8 vote of the Judiciary Committee. Not to give me a vote on this would be a major betrayal of trust in my as I would see it.
Well, she's not going to have that vote on the base bill, maybe as an amendment. Let's go right to the heart of it. Chris Murphy is with us, U.S. Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, Democrat. He's pushed hard for a new assault weapons ban and stricter background checks. He's been on the front line both of what happened at Newtown and in Washington, D.C. Senator Murphy, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
What do you think of how this is unfolding this week? Is gun reform gutted?
No, it's not. Listen, I'm disappointed that the assault weapons ban isn't going to be in the base bill, but Senator Feinstein is right. I mean, there's just huge majorities out there who support this, and as she remembers, she didn't get the assault weapons ban passed the first time she proposed it in the 1990s. She got it done the second time, in part because there was a public outcry that it wasn't included in the initial Brady bill. Here's the thing, though. If we are able to get a bill that puts new federal restrictions on gun trafficking, if we can close these just absolutely egregious loopholes in the background check system, something that 80% of gun owners support, and then maybe most importantly for the families in Newtown that I represent, if we can pick out some pieces of the assault weapons ban bill that can get 60 votes, such as the restriction on these high-capacity magazines, which was part of Senator Feinstein's bill, but really does enjoy support amongst many senators that don't support the assault weapons ban but may support the ban on high-capacity magazines. That, frankly, would have a very, very big impact going forward on trying to reduce the casualties from these incidences of mass violence. So, listen, I'm not happy about the fact that we don't have 60 votes for the assault weapons ban. I don't think that's surprising to a lot of people that have been watching the pronouncements of members of the Senate, but there's still a lot of work to do here in the next couple weeks.
You say, Senator Murphy, that there are huge majorities out there. I guess you're talking about the American people. I'd say huge majorities for universal background check. Yes, many polls showing 80%+ for that. For bans on assault weapons and the big high-capacity magazines, smaller majorities, 50%+, but majorities, yes. So majorities out there, huge majorities for part of it, but not huge majorities in the U.S. Senate, where your party is the majority. Why not?
Well, huge majorities of the Democrats in the Senate. So, I mean, let's be
not enough.
Where the problem is here, again, you need 60 votes, right? So even if we have 50 votes for the assault weapons ban, the problem here is not that Democrats in the Senate aren't supporting it. The problem is that we can get one or two members of the 45-member Republican caucus to support this.
But so, you've got almost 55 votes, and Harry Reid says he can't get 40.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that vote count. I mean, I think that there's, you know, the vast majority of Democrats here. I acknowledge that there are Democrats who are opposing the assault weapons ban. But, I mean, let's just be honest. There's not equal blame to spread here. The Republican Party has decided, essentially, to, at least with respect to the assault weapons ban, stand in lockstep with the NRA. And they're threatening to do that on background checks. I mean, I just, you know, can't believe that ultimately the Republicans aren't going to be able to deliver votes for universal background checks, something that, again, 90% of Americans support. There is some divergence of opinion within the Democratic Party, but, if we had a handful of Republicans here, then we could get this done.
Fair enough, but why doesn't that big majority that supports, let's say, universal background checks, and there it is, an overwhelming majority, why does that not flow through to our U.S. Congress and U.S. Senate? Why doesn't it show up there? Why isn't it represented?
Yeah, so listen, I've spent the last, 2 months trying to debunk all of this mythology about the NRA. There is this idea here that if you cross the NRA, you're going to pay a political price in certain swing states and districts. That is absolutely not true. The NRA is a total paper tiger. They lost 13 of the 16 races that they put money into in the United States Senate in the last election. And yet, despite all the work that I've tried to do to unveil them for what they are, they've scared a lot of members here. And I think also there is this issue of what the NRA stamp of approval means for some members that may, have been more progressive on other issues like health care or energy reform. The gun issue is the place that they can have some bona fides represented to their more conservative constituencies. I don't think that makes sense, and I frankly know that the NRA doesn't have the power that they claim to have around here, but I think that's part of the story as to why you have a United States Congress that does not reflect the will of the people right now, and I think that's an absolute tragedy.
They may not have the power, but you've got a lot of people in the Congress who are voting their way or ready to vote their way. U.S. Senator Chris Murphy is with us, Democrat from Connecticut. Fawn Johnson's here from National Journal. Jackie Kucinich from USA Today. Let's go to our listeners. Stonington, Connecticut is calling. Pat, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Pat.
Thanks, Tom. I have to disagree with Senator Murphy. Here in our own state, he doesn't have to worry about the NRA because for every NRA member, there are 12 gun owners who are not NRA members. And believe me, they are incensed. And
incensed about what, Pat?
Is that What are we? What's that?
Incensed about what, Pat?
What we are mad about is that people that don't know the first thing about firearms are the ones that are driving these new laws. And I can tell. I've been to plenty of the state hearings and the committees that I see up there. None of them are actually gun owners. And when they finally brought in some of my experts, it seemed like their attitude started to change and started to moderate a little bit.
But how much do you have to know to be concerned about a 30-round clip or to be interested in universal background checks? Do you need to be a gun expert to look at it and think about those issues?
Well, I would challenge you and your guest today. Are any of you gun owners or any of you actually shot a so-called assault weapon with a 30-round clip?
I grew up with guns, but nobody in a community where everybody had a shotgun to keep dogs out of the flocks and everybody had a rifle to go after squirrels, nobody owned an assault rifle in my whole community in those days, Pat.
Well, what would you consider reasonable? 5 rounds, 10 rounds, 17 rounds?
Joe Biden, it's not me. Joe Biden says.
Joe Biden.
Maybe if it was 10. Hang on. Gabby Giffords may be alive today because somebody had a chance to get up between clips and knock that guy away from his deadly task there in Tucson. But let us pick it up with Senator Pat. I appreciate your call. Chris Murphy, how about it? Are we flying blind here? Is the problem that the people who want reform don't know enough about guns? Does the clip size matter?
Well, listen, I don't own a gun, but, 65% of Americans don't own guns. And so the fact is that you don't need to own an assault weapon in order to care about the fact that we're seeing, almost weekly carnage on our streets due to some of these weapons. And the fact is you're right. These high-capacity magazines do have an effect on the number of people that are killed in these incidences. It does tend to be that when these amateur shooters switch cartridges, that someone is able to intercede or they have trouble with the exchange and the shooting ends. And, I don't need to be an expert in assault weapons to understand that, to understand that people would be alive today in Newtown if Adam Lanza walked in there with a 10-round magazine rather than with a bunch of 30-round magazines. So I just reject this idea that you can't talk about gun control if you're not an expert in guns. Frankly, you'd shut down the United States legislative system if the only things that legislators could talk about were the handful of things in which they are experts on. We are all elected to work
sure.
on things that our constituents care about, not just things that we are personal experts on.
So where do you think we're going to end up, Senator? We've just got you for another minute. They say after this two-week break coming up, we're going to come back and have a vote when all the dust settles here. What are we likely to have? And be realistic, because a couple of months ago people were talking very big. It's been whittled down a lot. What do you think is likely to come out of this?
So I predict that ultimately Republicans know that they cannot vote against universal background checks. For all of the bluster and all of the reluctance to be the authors of that compromise, they will vote for it. That, along with increased school safety protections and a federal law on gun trafficking, will be the base bill. I think the question will be, can you pass a ban on high-capacity magazines? And I have talked to lots of Democrats and Republicans who are not going to vote for the assault weapons ban amendment, but will vote for a restriction on high-capacity magazines. My next 2 or 3 weeks will be dedicated to trying to find 60 votes in the United States Senate to pass that. If the Senate passes it, the Republicans in the House, I predict, will bring it up because they do not want to go into the next election wearing the burden of having stopped common-sense bipartisan gun reform from becoming law.
U.S. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 3 months after the massacre of children at Sandy Hook, we're asking if gun reform is about to be gutted, stripped down, whatever word you like, in the U.S. Senate. Fawn Johnson is with us from National Journal out of Washington, been covering this closely. Jackie Kucinich, congressional reporter for USA Today, is here. We'll hear in just a moment from Charles Cook, a writer for the National Review. Fawn, Jackie, lots of response online. Brian says, wow, I'm severely disappointed in this Congress. Can't believe that after the murder, there's poor innocent children, all the victims of all the mass shootings, and not just mass shootings, but gang violence. We still cannot seem to get any gun reform legislation passed. This is just a travesty. Neil says, Harry Reid needs a primary challenge. From the left, it's the only language he understands. Cowell writes, my fear, a weak bill will pass, and when there's another massacre, the NRA will say, see, we have gun control, and it didn't work. But there's plenty here as well that say, hands off, please. Sean says, the less Congress does, the better. Jackie Kucinich, what do you think of Senator Murphy's prognostication there on where this will end up, on what might come out of the Senate?
I think trying to predict what the House of Representatives is going to do is a very difficult thing.
I thought that one was easy. I thought that'd just be a no, no, no.
Well, there is that. I mean, what he was saying is that the House of Representatives won't dare to vote against something that has bipartisan support. I wouldn't say that at all. I think, you know, any bill that has a tough time getting through the Senate is going, you multiply that by a factor of 10 when they get to the House. The Judiciary Committee chairman told me 2 days ago that they're not even going to take up gun control until they have immigration done. So there are a lot of hurdles left for these bills, even beyond the Senate. And one of the political realities here is, you know, when you have senators who might be on the fence about some of these measures, if there is not a chance that this is going to get past the House and they put their neck out, it actually puts them in a worse position. And, you know, it's...
Is that why Harry Reid wants to bring in the assault weapons ban as an amendment so they don't necessarily have to be on the record on it, on the base bill, whether just getting
it to the floor? You still have to vote on it. You still have to vote on an amendment.
Okay.
I mean, the assault weapons bill was an amendment when it became law.
But they could say, well, I voted for the big bill, but, you know, I mean, you can split hairs once an amendment, I guess.
Oh, I mean, no, it's still a vote. I mean, it's the last assault weapons ban was passed as an amendment to the crime bill.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a standalone. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's an amendment or not. I mean, you still could be hit on it politically. And I think a lot of members there are several members from purple or red states who are Democrats that have an eye to that.
Couple of callers here, and we'll go to our Charles Cook from National Review. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
When all is said and done, Americans of all ages will still be defenseless sitting ducks because that five-second window hasn't been addressed. That's when the gun perpetrator enters the room before they pull the trigger. What we need is some type of technology that will totally incapacitate the gun predator, and it doesn't have to be a gun, and we need to develop that, and then we need to figure out who will have this technology, where they will have it, and we need to work on that five-second window.
Well, are you talking about a taser, or what are you talking about? I mean, it sounds like you're talking about a gun on the teacher's hip.
Well, if it's a taser, it has to be able to go through body armor. But we're not addressing that five-second window. And you talk to the law enforcement, they totally agree. We've got to incapacitate the gun predator in their steps.
But I mean, we don't live in a Star Trek world. You can't just beam them up to some other planet. There they stand. A taser won't necessarily do it. I guess with body armor, a gun wouldn't necessarily do it. The NRA says, get guns in there, Craig. What do you say?
Well, I don't particularly want guns because I want the perpetrator to remain alive because I want to find out what made them end up wanting to do this, and they usually end up dead.
Yeah, and maybe if there were enough background check, you could track back where that gun came from. Craig, I appreciate your call. One more right here. William in Franklin, Massachusetts. William, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. 2 points. The NRA has no independent power. It's Congress that gives them their power. And instead of doing the right thing for the American people, Congress is just in the pockets of the NRA, and they're only interested in keeping their jobs and getting reelected. Second point is the assault weapon ban. I've read the Second Amendment. The NRA talks about the right to an assault weapon. There's no right to an assault weapon in the Second Amendment. Do I have a right to have an M1 tank in my driveway and go shooting for just pleasure? Do I have a right to go duck hunting with a shoulder-fired heat-seeking missile? No. These are military weapons, and so is a high-capacity assault weapon. And it's line drawing. And since we have a right to say no American can have a tank or a heat-seeking missile or a shoulder rocket-fired shoulder grenade launcher, they also have the right to say there's no assault weapon.
William, let us pick it up right there. Certainly, Joe Biden talks the way you're talking, but there are plenty, read our comments, on the other side saying, hey, hands off my right to have something bigger than a regular rifle. Let me bring Charlie Cook in to look at just that issue. Writer for National Review, covers issues around the Second Amendment, joins us today from New York. Charles Cook, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. If I could just start by responding to the first thing your last caller said. He said that the National Rifle Association has no power outside of Congress. That's not quite right. The National Rifle Association has no power outside of the people. There's a bit of a myth here that the NRA is somehow enumerated in the Constitution or can magically stop things with some sort of magic power. In fact, the way that they win is to say to people, the person running is bad on guns, and then the people don't like the person who's bad on guns.
And Charles, they're very good at mustering votes, and they have shown that they can wield a lot of power against people who cross them, who don't get good scores.
Sure, and that's so, because the people who vote for them, it's not the NRA who's voting for them, it's the public when there's an election. But
well, I mean, we've looked at that at some depth, and of course, you're right, it comes down in the end to votes.
Right.
Votes are very often swayed by money. NRA very tied up with the gun industry, those ties very close as well. But let me ask you also about the last caller, Charles, and his interpretation of the Second Amendment says, look, you can't go around in an M1 tank. What's the right in the Second Amendment to an assault rifle?
Well, the Heller decision didn't define what was allowed and what wasn't, and it didn't set a standard of review. So that answer it hasn't yet been answered.
Which means Congress is free to lay down a ban.
Well, it does if you think that the role of Congress is to pass whatever it likes and then hope the Supreme Court doesn't strike it down.
That's pretty much what it does, isn't it?
Well, that's pretty much what it does, but it shouldn't. But can I just go one step back? Mm. I've been obviously listening to the discussion, and mm-hmm. I think the premise is wrong. There's a certain amount of begging the question here with a bit of emotional blackmail thrown in for good measure. You know, we hear words like cowards describing Congress, and they're selling out the people and the children, they're doing this and they're doing that. But the point is that only really makes sense if an assault weapons ban would do anything to help the children or the people. And if it would, Congress would be brave, of course, by enacting one.
What was the weapon used at Newtown, Charles?
Well, it was an assault weapon, as you know. But the question is whether somebody had walked into that room with a handgun or two handguns, as was used at Virginia Tech, would the outcome have been different? And this isn't just me saying this. This isn't just National Review or people on the right. When you look at the last assault weapons ban, the University of Pennsylvania said it didn't work. The Department of Justice said that it didn't work. The New York Times Freakonomics writers said that it didn't work and that it was ridiculous to suggest that it did. So if there was any evidence whatsoever to suggest that an assault weapons ban would help the children or the people, it might be sensible to pass one. As it is, there's nothing at all.
I mean, there's no question that overwhelmingly the gun murders in this country happen not with assault weapons. I mean, this
right.
much is true. On the other hand, if people wanted it passed and they wanted their congresspeople to put some restriction there, I mean, we've done that in this country before. What about the size of the magazines, Charles?
Well, again, I don't think that that's remotely relevant. This is a normal reaction to what was an abomination. But you can change a magazine in a second, or you can take two guns with a 10-round magazine in it. If you're going to try and kill someone, history unfortunately shows that you managed to do it. So I think gun control is, in some regards, they're actually somewhat callous, in that if they believe that guns are the problem, which I don't, obviously, but if they do believe that guns are the problem, and I respect that, they should be calling for a ban on guns. There's no point inventing this new class of weapons, calling them assault weapons, and then saying we'll ban them when they're responsible for about 3% of the murders.
We're past that on to magazines, and I have to say, if I were the teacher on the floor in a classroom full of six-year-olds, I would rather that it was a 10-round magazine that the guy had rather than 30 or 50. I'd rather have that chance, even if it just takes a second to get up and knock that gun away.
Look, I'm afraid this is obviously gets into an area which is unpleasant, but if you really think that there would have been any difference in Newtown if that man had walked into a school full of children.
There was a difference in Gabby Gifford's case.
Yeah, but there was no difference at Virginia Tech. I mean, there's just very little evidence magazine sizes do much about anything.
Let's bring our callers in again. Judy, Spirit Lake, Iowa. Judy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just happened to think of this issue. I'm driving a car and listening to your program, and it is all focused on the source of or excuse me, it's all focused on the person who's getting this gun, whether they can be have a background check and et cetera. And I just happen to think, why can't we focus on the source? Where are these guns coming from, these war-type guns? Where are the sources? And can't we focus more on that and maybe get farther than the people that are receiving the guns?
Well, I mean, but they're... Most of them are manufactured by American gun manufacturers in great and profitable quantity. We know where they're coming from, by and large, Judy. So what do we do?
Well, I don't know. It was just a new thought that I had, and I thought, you know, certainly if they're manufacturing these guns and people are buying them, why are they selling them to individuals rather than to military and those type of sources?
Well, let me tell you, check in on, and you'll find that there are many, many Americans who very much want exactly those guns, and there's no restriction on them having them. Fawn Johnson, let me come to you on this question of the size of the magazine. Share with us what you hear in Congress about the debate there. Do people say this is something that might pass, that it would be effective? If you know, assault weapons is not getting banned, is not getting enough support here. Is there a sense in Congress that maybe knocking down the size of those magazines would be an effective step, not just a politically sought-after step?
Well, Tom, I think it's important when you ask that question to know who is providing the answer. So the people that I talk to who are like Senator Murphy or some people in the House who are pushing for gun control really do think that that limiting the magazine clip is an effective way to stop especially things like what happened in Newtown. It's not going to do much for street crime, for your standard drug street crime or some of these other things, but it will allow, you know, perhaps a lower body count on some of these mass killings that, that cause us all so much difficulty. And I also think that they are hoping that it's one step below an assault weapons ban from kind of a psychological perspective, which would mean that you might be able to pull some people who are hell no on an assault weapons ban, but might be able to but would be willing to vote for something that just, I mean, it's not like it's banning anything. All it's doing is limiting the number of bullets you can have. And, you know, there are Republicans who you might be able to shame into voting for that. There are certainly Democrats who are no on assault weapons who could do this. So I think there's a political tendency to be looking at this, but there also is, I think, a genuine argument that says that this could at least, you know, lower some body counts. Now, if that's going to make any difference on the more conservative side, I don't think so.
Let's get Ron in Augusta, Georgia on the air. Ron, thanks for calling. You're on.
Tom, what's the likelihood when this universal background check maybe is getting passed that the health, mental health professionals will be required to turn in names of those patients that are more likely to cause violence or at a potential to cause violence? And how much opposition will that be if they decide to try to suspend HIPAA or any other privacy laws that are already in effect? And will the ACLU step in and try to fight it? What kind of will that go on?
That's a big deal, and I appreciate your raising it, Ron. I'll take it to Jackie and then to Charles. Jackie, if we get to that point where it looks like a universal background check is going through, what about states reporting on the mental health background of gun buyers? There have been lots of reports of big holes in their reporting. What about privacy laws and reporting consistency, Jackie?
Well, there's been Lindsey Graham actually introduced a bill that would address some of this. If you've pled not guilty by reason of insanity, it would be added to the NICS system, which is the system that, that says if you can have a gun or not. It's the federal database. So there is some progress in there is some tension to this, I guess, is the best way to say it in Congress, but the devil's always in the details. You do have HIPAA laws. I can't imagine them repealing HIPAA laws. Mm. So, it's one of those things that has been talked around on the edges, but we haven't really seen a lot legislatively on that yet.
Charles, latest poll I see, 84% of Americans in favor of universal background checks for private gun sales, sales at gun shows, everything, 84 to 15%. Do you think that will end up in the law? Should it?
I think it might. I also think that quoting statistics and majorities, even supermajorities, when discussing unalienable rights is sometimes a mistake. The devil might be in the detail, but the principle we have in this country is that the unalienable rights to which everyone is entitled should have as few obstacles in their way as possible. And the Second Amendment is really an exception to that, unfortunately. I think what will in legislation.
I mean, we bound many rights with government regulations.
Not
but,
as strictly as these, though.
Well, I mean, right now it doesn't seem too strict. We've got 40% of sales not going through anything. What do you think of the odds of enough Republicans coming around for a universal background check to make it through, Charles?
I think it will entirely depend on how the universal background check system works. If it's de facto gun registration or if there is the federal government keeping hold of records for more than a
That's actually,
a
none of the legislation right now has any kind of provision that would create a registry. It's illegal. They're not allowed to do it. It's in current law, and nothing in the current legislation that's being considered changes that law.
I guess it's in how you define that and how you see that. We're going to watch very closely as this goes on through the legislative process on the other side of the two-week recess coming up right in front of us here. Charles Cook with National Review, we're very grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you for joining us from New York.
Thank you.
Jackie Kucinich at USA Today. Thank you very much for your insights today, Jackie.
Thank you.
And Fawn Johnson, national reporter for National Journal. Thanks, Fawn, for being with us.
Pleasure.
Thanks to Connecticut U.S. Senator Chris Murphy for joining us earlier, and to all of our listeners. Many comments online. Check them out. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.